dropped out of high school, and now you think you're tough.
I'd like to welcome back Dan Hardy. He's coming back. He says he wants to come back for a marquee fight. I think I'm a marquee fight right now.
Part of the reason why I'm doing this is because I am able-bodied and able-minded. I don't want to be a guy that's like, oh, he's falling apart and he's a little punchy and maybe it's time to stop.
Fuck the UFC. You're shit. You motherfuckers don't look after nobody.
People have accused me of steroid use since I was 17.
Tristan Thompson's dating Khloe Kardashian. How many do you get?
Zero. Minus five. Who gives a that family are the scourge of society.
Agreed.
Merry Christmas. That's all he wrote back was Merry Christmas. I'm like, Brock, you're the fucking man, dude. Congratulations and welcome back, buddy.
What's happening?
Oh, not much. Just watching Ronda fight.
Okay. Should I make a Westworld joke or is that old news now?
No, it's never too old for Westworld joke.
What fight are you watching?
It's one of the free fights, Ronda versus Misha Tate, number two.
Oh, so it'll be on for a few minutes anyway.
Exactly,
one of the 13-second ones, yeah.
Now, I get some time to see what the girl's all about. Figure out her strengths and weaknesses from a fight years and years ago.
Yeah, she probably hasn't changed a whole heck of a lot, has she?
No, that's actually probably one of her big problems.
Could be. We'll see pretty soon here.
But yeah, everybody, this is the show, halfcredit.com, Mike Coffin, that's Matt Grady. Matt takes over now. I can pretend like I did a formal introduction. Ooh. In reality, I should just let Matt do all that, because fuck that, I want something to do. So yeah, anyways, take it away, Matt.
Alrighty. I was thinking we should probably do a little UFC on Fox talk based on last week, and then kind of move into current news, and then we'll be out of here. This could be, in theory, this could be a quick show because there's really no shows to preview this coming weekend, but we'll see how this goes, I guess.
If we hit a lull, I'll just talk about Crazy Ex-Girlfriend a lot.
Okay. So this past weekend, we obviously had UFC on Fox. It was Van Zant versus Watterson. It was held in Sacramento, the hometown of Uriah Faber. Attendance was 13,136 with a total gate of 1.238 million. In the main event, jeez, Michelle Watterson defeated Paige Van Zant by rear naked choke. I actually think it looked like Van Zant went out. She clearly didn't tap. She was probably only out for a second because she came to like immediately. But impressive win for Watterson. Probably not necessarily what the UFC would have liked to see. Obviously, Paige has been getting the big push from Dancing with the Stars, and they kind of, I want to say, earmarked her as a future star. But she's had some tough losses. Obviously, the Nama Yunus loss last year, and now this Watterson loss doesn't really help her cause. Any thoughts on Paige or this fight in general?
Well, I think Paige just not fight in December. That seems to be her big problem. Every December, she just goes up in class and loses. So she just needs to stick to this fighting only in the spring or summer.
Maybe that's a better time of year. Did you really think she was going up in class? Because I kind of saw, I thought this would be a pretty even fight because Watterson's kind of smaller. She used to fight at 105, and she hadn't fought in over a year. I kind of thought it would be a more competitive fight, and Watterson just kind of, I don't want to say like used a judo throw, but kind of hip tossed her almost, and I had an arm, I mean, but either way, took her down, took her back, and choked her out in 321. It was a dominant performance by Watterson. Maybe you don't want to say star-making performance, but definitely a big win on a big stage for Watterson.
Yeah, like on paper, again, like you said, like I said last week, I didn't really see this as being one-sided, but it ended up, in some respects, worse than the Nama Yunus fight, although the Nama Yunus fight just exposed every hole possible. I know what I said, everybody. Fuck you. Michelle Watterson, it was kind of like a win-win for the UFC because Watterson is the karate hottie. She's attractive. But maybe this is just something because I know it, but she's also not quite Paige Van Zant. In fact, forgetting what you think about their actual aesthetics, just their persona and what they can sell. And Paige, you know, while I joke that she's jailbait and things like that, she does have the ability, I would think, to appeal to a much younger demographic, female demographic than UFC might ever find themselves attracting. And whereas with Michelle Waterson, again, I think she's attractive. I don't think that her looks would ever hurt her. But, again, I know she's a mom. She's kind of got, like, a mom haircut almost. And, like, there's something about it just kind of takes it away from, like, okay, you're not quite the naive, innocent imp that they were selling Paige as to us. But she's still up there and kicked her ass, so good for her. She's getting fast-tracked to something big, I would imagine.
Yeah, I mean, my big takeaway was, like, I want to say I've come to the conclusion on Van Zandt, but because obviously she's young and she's got time to get better, and she's won fights in the UFC. It's not like she's a terrible fighter, but she's a lower, you know, top 10 sort of fighter probably right now, and she's young and she's only 22. She can get better. But I just question, and again, I don't know her, but just from the vibe I get from her, she's just, like, so happy to, like, be there. Like, at the weigh-in, she's dancing. Coming out to the cage, she's smiling. In the cage, like, at the weigh-ins, when they do a stare-down, she's smiling. She's just, like, happy to be there. And I don't know if she's got that killer instinct. Like, when you saw Waterson in the cage right before the fight started and you saw Van Zandt, Waterson looked like she was in there to kill somebody. And Van Zandt's just happy, like, I want to say doing the princess wave, you know, you see Cinderella doing the car at Disney World to the crowd. But, like, I kind of got that vibe where she's not Matt Brown. Do you know what I mean?
Well, she was born with working indoor plumbing, so that's true. She's not Matt Brown.
But, like, that mentality that, like, she's a starving dog and she's in there to kill somebody and needs this win to feed her family and make a living. I just don't get that sense of drive from her.
No, I think you're absolutely right. I mean, I've been saying it from like day one almost, but you know, she's delusional. She's had this idea of, oh, I've had a tough life. Cause that's what everybody in America wants is a Horatio Alger story. And you know, male and female, we all want to pretend like whatever we came from, it was, we always pretend that it was lower. I mean, fucking Donald Trump pretends like he's rags to riches. And, you know, his dad had the ability to loan him millions of dollars. Now, that doesn't diminish what Donald Trump has done in the meantime. To take millions and make it into billions is a skill, and become president is what used to be a skill. But again, he always wants to portray himself as starting lower. And I think Paige is trying to do the same thing. And the reality is she's never really apparently lived life long enough to have that kind of damage that you need to be, I think, a really great fighter. Like, Ronda's damaged. You can see, you know, just the way that she was training and going all over the world at such young ages and doing nothing but combat sports. She isn't right in the head totally. And almost all the male champions, you just look at them and you go, yeah, there's a reason why Dominic Cruz always has just like a little sinister look. Maybe it's just the Eddie Munster thing, but still, you know, you just know that on some level there's something off with them. And Paige, you don't get that sense. I look at somebody that's almost not, she's not even like trying to like pretend fight, like play, like cosplay with it. Like, she's almost like she doesn't really totally understand. And she's not like a quitter, but she's not a fighter, and she's not really enough of an athlete either. Because truthfully, I mean, most females will be around physical athletic peak about her age. So I just think that you know, she is what she is. She's an okay fighter who's pretty. You can make money at that.
True. I want to see her for once in her life, like, get pissed off, like, want to be like, go into a fight and want to kill somebody. You just never get that vibe, and I think it's hard to take it to the next level if you aren't that serious and you're looking to, like, beat somebody up. You know what I mean? All the great fighters have that to a degree. Some are super athletic and they seem like nice guys, like GSP, but most of them have this competitive drive and this, I want to say a mean streak, but there's some meanness to them where they know they've got to beat somebody up and they're willing to do it and willing to train hard and take it to another level that, you know, maybe the mid-level guys just aren't. And it seems like Paige is one of those mid-level fighters now.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's something I'm sure I've talked about it in the past because I talk about myself all the time. But I have that same difficulty as far as like a natural killer instinct on the mat. If I want to beat somebody, I usually have to be significantly more technical and knowledgeable than that person, because I don't have the grind an elbow into the face, make a move, just kind of force things mentality. And so, and I know that, you know, I always have to almost compete a level down in some respects because I have to just be that much better, which also means that there's a ceiling to how good I could get because I just don't have that ability to be a total fucking dick out there. And my, like my brother has it. He doesn't have the technique or the knowledge that I do, but he's got, he's always been just a mean little bastard at his core. There's something in him. And, like I'm more passive aggressive, I guess, with my bastardness. So it sucks. What I'm saying is that, if Mickey doesn't want her, I'll take Paige.
What, where would you go with Watterson next? You see, you have a fight in mind?
Nothing immediately jumps, to the forefront of my head. She can't go.
Because, I mean, if she gets, like, a top five win, say they put her in there with Nama Yunus next. Like, I would favor Nama Yunus in that fight. But if she could beat her, she'd be in the mix for a title shot. Like, she only needs one more good win, probably.
Yeah, I know that Rose called her out. I think it's a smart move on Rose's part because Michelle is probably – I mean, you know, she did make herself a name to some degree with whatever that means within the division. So, yeah, I think her and Rose works. I can see where Rose is coming from because stylistically that's how Rose likes to fight, just get on the ground and grind it out. And, you know, really, the winner of that is easily right there fighting for the title come, well, if Joanna still has it.
Sure. Then in the semi-main event, we had Mickey Gall defeating Sage Northcutt by rear naked choke at 140 in the second round. Kind of an entertaining fight. I like this fight. I thought it was fun. It's two guys who are, you know, still young and improving and getting better, hopefully. But Sage probably had an edge on the feet, obviously. But Gall caught him with a good shot that rocked him, knocked Northcutt down, and then Gall just took his back and kind of had his way with him. Gall clearly had an advantage on the ground. In the first round, there was a little trash talking going on between the two. So it was kind of a fun fight. After the fight, Gall called out Dan Hardy, of all people, which was an interesting call out, considering Hardy still is not able to fight due to, like, a heart condition, I believe. But good fight, fun fight. Sage has a ways to go still, but sky's still the limit for Gall, I think.
Everything about this fight was just very entertaining to me, especially when you recap it like that. Because, like, all I can think is how Northcutt Sage just kept going around and trying, like, this tough guy thing. And, like, I'm going to talk trash. And, like, there was, like, pictures of reportedly of him with the Diaz brothers. Like, they were impressed or something like that. Like, what, dude, just you, if you're going to be your best, you got to be yourself. Now, there's a way to be, you know, a nice guy and still be successful in the sport. You just got to find, ask George St. Pierre, whatever it is. You don't have
Uriah Faber. Yeah.
You don't have to be a total dick, but at the same time, if you're a nice guy, don't try to be something else. Cause that's, you're never going to work that way. You know, it's a corny thing to say, but it's true. Like, you fight like your personality. And if you're denying your personality, you're not going to fight right. So especially with the style that Sage has, which is very flashy and kind of hyperactive and hyper athletic. If that works best when you're not angry. When you're angry, that's going to be tough. When you're angry, you just want to get in there and punch and box, and that's going to be to Paige's detriment. So, Sage's detriment, whatever his name is. Him and, you know, they all look the same. You know, those young 20-year-old blondes, they all look the same these days. And, but yeah, I mean, Mickey Gall looked good. He got hit hard a little bit in the first round, then he dropped Sage and choked him out, and it was pretty elementary. They'd say he wants to go down to 155 from now on, which I think
is crazy. He's 6'2". I mean, he's listed as 6'2".
Yeah.
He'd be a tall, lanky dude at 155. I mean, he says he can make the cut. Like, he's acting like it's not a big deal, but he's a tall guy at 155, man. 6'2 is big.
He may not be 6'2". You know, that obviously these heights tend to fluctuate a lot.
Maybe that's with his hair spiked up or something.
Exactly. It's just so dumb. It's funny. But yeah, I mean, good for him if he can make 55. I think the sooner he realizes it, the better. Him calling out Dan Hardy was a reach, but, you know, it was kind of smart because Hardy's been kind of half talking about coming back. He's going to be back at 55 or 70 if he can get over, like, Wolf Parkinson's disease, I think it is, or something like that. It's got a wolf in it. In the syndrome,
yeah.
Maybe. I just like the idea of a wolf Parkinson's disease. Like, he's actually part wolf.
And part Parkinson's.
Yeah.
It's a bad combination.
Yeah. So, you know, but again, you know, we love Mickey here. So, sorry, dog. Not you. The fighter. We love Mr. Gall here at the show, and happy to see him get his win, and he did what he's supposed to do, and he again, at least he's trying something.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
The UFC's going to notice that, and I mean, we'll see where he progresses. I think he's still, you know, probably at least 12 to 18 months away from getting in there with, you know, true, what I would call true UFC regulars.
Right.
And until that, you know, even though they wouldn't fight like a Jim Miller level or something like that, yeah, Joe Lozon. So, but yeah, again, he's young and young guys train hard and he's doing the right things at going to TriStar and all that. So we'll see.
Obviously there's plenty of guys in the UFC for Gall to fight, like lower level guys, but what do you do with Northcutt now? It's like, he's been exposed a couple times. I mean, there's obviously the Barbarina fight and even the guys he beat. I mean, you don't want to say they're bottom of the barrel UFC fighters, but they really are. They don't want Northcutt to lose a bunch of fights in a row and cut him and have him go to Bellator or something. So they, who can they put him in there with where he can be competitive, you think?
Nobody really jumps off the top of my head for me. What I would do is just keep having him fight guys are at his level, which is guys who are ready for their first or second fight in the UFC. That's why I would just, you know, it'll be like a weird deal, kind of like old school boxing, building them up by having beat a bunch of tomato cans. It'll be like 25-2 in a couple of years. People are like, what the fuck's happened? That's really impressive. But
that, I mean, that's not really the UFC style, though, either. I mean, they've never really done that for anybody. Like, I guess my question is Northcutt even worth it? Like, well, even if he runs off five straight wins against a bunch of jobbers, for lack of a better term, eventually he's going to have to fight somebody, a real fight. And granted, he's young. He could get better. I get that. He's 20 or 21, whatever it is. He can't even buy a beer. So, I mean, to a degree, probably he clearly – I don't want to say clearly shouldn't be in the UFC right now, but there's no other 20-year-olds in the UFC currently. And there's a reason, because they don't have the experience and the skill level to compete there. There's a reason there's regional shows around the country. And Sage is a prime example of that. But it's like they brought him in, and it seems like they like him, and he's got some name value, and he might even be a little bit of a draw based on how the ratings of this show did. So it's a weird situation that they've got themselves in.
Again, yeah, that's why I would – when I say they give him fight guys at his level, I mean until he like proves otherwise. Even if it makes him look like – you know, if he gets to 5 wins in a row, if you're looking and going, golly, barely beat a guy in his first fight in the UFC – you just keep doing it because you do it if you think that there's long-term star potential there, and apparently there's some charisma it factor. Because, he's a 4 to 6 year project. He's not a, you know, 4 to 6 month guy. He may even be a decade.
Big thing is, I mean, everybody who's 20 years old is a 4 to 6 year project.
Right.
You know? How many – there's nobody in the UFC who's 20. I mean,
he's got charisma and he's got some looks, and they brought in guys young before. It's just they've been like John Jones and BJ Penn where they prove themselves. But I'll say this for Sage. He's gone out there. He's 2 losses for 170 for whatever that's worth. Mm-hmm. And yeah, he's fighting and he's beating dudes who are fighters. They're low level dudes. And again, he's only 20. I mean, he's 20 years old and he's barely 20. So, it's such a weird age as far as improving, and who knows how that's going to work. I suspect his limitations will be that he's just—I don't know—I perceive him as easily manipulated because he's—I think he's stupid. But I just do. I think he's a genuinely dumb person. I don't use that golden retriever metaphor out of nowhere. He's a fucking dog. But
yeah.
We'll see. I mean, fuck it. At least it's somebody with a name. So whenever he fights, I'm going to have a rooting interest.
Yeah, absolutely.
Against him. But yeah.
Right, I'm with you. Prior to that, we had your Uriah Faber. And what's being called his retirement fight, defeating Brad Pickett? Should probably also be Brad Pickett's retirement fight as well. But Faber won the fight 30-26 on all three scorecards. Faber looked good. I mean, he was fighting a guy who's older than him and a guy who's lost, I think, 5 of his last 6. So, and as Faber usually does against, you know, not the top 1, 2, or 3 guys in the division, he wins and he looks good doing it. So, a happy ending for Faber if this really is the end. He was even alluding to if there was a big money offer or a fight that came up he couldn't turn down, he would probably come back and fight again. But for now, for the time being, Faber's calling it a career. He went out on a win in his hometown. The crowd was going crazy the whole fight. Kind of a happy storybook ending. And in theory, he's getting out before he's like too beat up or is taking too much damage. Obviously, that's hard to tell, but right now it appears that way. So good on Faber.
Yeah, you know, from an athletic standpoint, setting aside the whole "you never can tell" and guys, you know, it's tough to tell somebody to retire, blah blah blah. This fight is exactly why he needs to retire. You know, Brad Pickett's a dude that's, you know, fought at 125 with ease, who's older, who's been has jaw rocks, who's never been nearly at Faber's level, and Faber beat him, and it was convincing. It was, you know, he was never in trouble, but in the first round he kind of had him hurt, and he didn't get to finish. And I feel like just Uriah Faber of even, you know, 3 years ago, maybe 5 years ago, you know, he would have finished Brad Pickett right there. And that he didn't is telling me, you know, he's slowing down just enough. And, you know, we saw someone else retire this weekend, and I've seen what can happen if you don't do it the right way. So, dude, get out before you land on the back of your head. That's all I can say.
Any thoughts on
Bernard Hopkins, anybody? Bernard Hopkins?
No, I'm with you. He fell out of the ring. I'm with you. Any thoughts on Faber in general, just like his legacy? Is there a legacy there, be it being a smaller, you know, 145-pound guy back from the WEC days? I mean, I loved watching him fight back then. I mean, a lot of people say he put that smaller fighters on the map. Do you agree with that narrative, or you think that's a little overblown?
It's interesting. It probably will stick as a narrative. I don't think it'll fade. But, you know, 45 and 55 isn't a big weight class division, and, you know, you could basically say that Jens Pulver, BJ Penn kind of introduced that. Really, BJ Penn probably gets credit historically overall for his importance in the division. But, you know, I mean, that was, quote-unquote, the small guys. I think the one thing that Faber did, though, is he brought all the attention to 145, and it's in particular the entire WEC. Like, he basically was the Hulk Hogan of the WEC. And so, let's see, would be a better analogy. Man, nobody ever did it right. So when, you know, they merged the companies, because he was part of them, he had been part of the two divisions already, and actually when the 25 came in after that, so he's kind of like the guy that brought over three divisions, because you can pinpoint the UFC's, you know, the arrival of those three divisions directly to him, and they all came right away. So, yeah, he'll probably get a lot of credit. And, you know, the dude was the best at 145 pounds for a while there. Never will get the proper recognition, just because even though I think it was universally agreed that the WC featherweight title was the best in the world, it just never had the exposure of you know, the UFC. But, you know, I'm glad he's done before it appears he's physically disabled. His legs still work amazingly, and his knees haven't gone to shit. And we'll know for sure if he's serious, because if he is, you're supposed to, just like in other sports, formally declare that you're retired so you can stop being tested by USADA.
That's right. In the opener, Alan Joban defeated Mike Perry by unanimous decision, 29-28, 30-27, 30-27. Joban kind of just... I mean, Perry's known kind of being like a brawler and throwing heavy hands, but Joban kind of just kept him at distance, kept him at bay, landed a lot of body kicks, worked a lot of kicks throughout the fight, and was able to avoid that big shot from Perry. Not a lot else to say there on my end, unless I'm missing something.
I got jack shit to say about the fight. It was there. It was, and it wasn't. Nobody cared.
Nothing too major on the undercard. A few good fights here and there. 7 of 9 of those undercard fights went to decision. Nothing too controversial, nothing major really, unless I'm missing something.
I don't think so. In the back of my mind, something weird happened in the Eddie Wineland fight, but I can't remember what it was now. And I may have been, it may have been a fever dream. So, yeah, the rest of the show happens, and no one cares, because it was a three-match fight show, and all three of the matches delivered in their own way, so, good for you, UFC, and plus, I was in the West Coast when this happened, so the whole thing was over by 7 o'clock, which was just surreal to me. I was like, this is so cool, it's only 7 o'clock, we got, like, half a day left, this is great, so, yeah.
So the ratings came in for this show, and it was the best ratings for a Fox card in 3 years.
Holy shit.
I guess you didn't hear this.
No, I didn't.
My next question was, were you surprised to hear this?
Yes, I was surprised. Wow, that's, that's pretty, I don't know what would be the last one that was really high, but, it was 3 years ago, 2013, it would have been pre-card, I got shit.
Hang on, I can probably pull it up here. Hang tight for a second.
I thought maybe they mentioned it.
Well, I guess my next question is, what do you think drew the ratings? Was it
this page?
What was it? Faber? Was it Page? Was it North?
I think it was
a combination.
I would say it's somewhat of a combination, but if you're talking like percentages, I'm talking Page Van Zandt doing 65-70% of the lifting.
Well, it's interesting because she opened that last show when she beat Rollins with that head kick.
Yeah.
And that show didn't do anything special in the ratings, so it's interesting.
But she had the name, and maybe people didn't watch her first fight back because they were, I think she's fake. But when they hear about it, I think there's a lot of times people underestimate just how word of mouth travels about somebody, and that highlight getting played on TV, it does make its way into the general consciousness. And so people are going, oh yeah, okay, I know her. Apparently, she can really go. And it's a night where there's not a lot on TV or whatever. It's December. The UFC always does better against football than I think they ever should. But whatever. So
So essentially, the numbers were this: the show did 3.178 million viewers for the four fight main card, which was the best number since 3.2 million tuned in to UFC on Fox 10 in January 2014.
That was January 2014. Is that Nate and Benson?
Could be. I remember that fight being in the winter. I can find out. UFC on Fox 10. This is riveting radio. Ben Henderson, Josh Thompson.
Son of a bitch, I was at that show.
Maybe that's why it did so well. People
that's
were
right.
looking for you. Cage side.
That's why UFC 207 is going to do so big. You know, I bring in the buys.
That's right. It's the second decent rating for a Sage show. I mean, he was on the prelims of UFC 200, so obviously that was going to do well. And then also, it was Faber's final fight. Maybe that got some viewers. I don't know. It's probably a combination of all of them. Maybe Gall has more of a name than people realize, too, coming off the Punk fight.
It could be a combination of all of that. It really could be, because a lot of times you'll see these shows on Fox, and they might be really good matchups. We kind of get lost in the weeds and forget, oh, wait, one of these guys isn't as well-known, even though it sounds like an exciting fight on paper. And in this case, you had, Paige Van Zandt, fans would have heard of. Michelle Watterson, who they wouldn't have heard of, but it's easiest to look at her and be, ooh, she's kind of pretty. You had Sage, who people have heard of. You had Mickey Gall, who everybody's heard of, especially, you saw the CM Punk thing. Brad Pickett, not as much of a name, but when you throw in Uriah Faber's retirement in his hometown, it sounds special. So I think this is an example of, you don't always need a huge draw at the top. Again, I still think the Page did a lot, but, putting together an overall solid card. And maybe people were also just happy from the previous week's greatest fight of all time and wanted to watch some more fighting.
Could be. The big thing I'm seeing everywhere with a lot of writers and hardcore fans is this going to motivate the UFC and upper management to put on more cards like this with obviously they don't have a lot of people right now, but more pretty faces, more names, more draws, and less skilled fighters. I mean, this kind of gives them an incentive to put, Sage in another high-profile fight or Gall in another high-profile fight, despite neither of them really being ready for a semi-main event, which they were on this show.
I think these are the they use the exact right fighters. You know, what you're trying to do is maximize your potential return. Because MMA promoting, it's all about hitting a home run. It's a sport. It's much more akin to playing roulette than it is playing poker. You only need to hit one out of 36. You put enough money, you can see how Conor McGregor carried the company for an entire year. Ronda did it before him, John Jones, and so on. So if they just get, if it's Mickey, if it's Sage, if it's Paige, if it's Michelle, if they get, or you know, if they get one of those to connect, yeah, I would run with them. They're not going to make a difference as far as drawing on pay-per-view. So I wouldn't even waste them on pay-per-view. This is exactly what they're designed for. You know, you take people who are they're up and coming. They're, you know, some of them, you know, Paige is, you know, Michelle was, they're both in the top 10, and the winner arguably would have been within, you know, striking distance, pardon the pun, of a title shot. So it wasn't a total farce. So when you can put pretty people on TV, get more exposure for your product, I mean, shit, people, we're getting great pay-per-views all the time, and if not that, it's all free. It's not like Big Fox versus Fox Sports 1 is some huge difference in potential viewership these days. I mean, 2017, we're going to start having to update our vocabulary to say how far in the future we are, and there's an excuse to not talk about how old-fashioned things used to be. But, yeah, it's just, you know, who cares? Just fucking watch your fights.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I don't care, but there's, you know, people bitching about, like, how can this show outdraw Dos Anjos versus Cerrone, you know, which was a title fight, same time of year in December on Fox. Like, you got better ratings. Paige VanZant versus Michelle Waterson outdrew that title fight with two legit guys and Cerrone being a pretty big name in the scheme of things.
That's simple because nobody wants to sleep with Donald Cerrone. Besides, like, Bar Maiden at the Tractor Trailer Moonshine Store. But
Cerrone's going to be pissed that you said that.
I'm sure he's listening.
Feelings are hurt.
Yeah, you know, it's just easier to sell pretty girls. And again, fucking last month, we just saw on the undercard of the biggest show almost in UFC history, Khabib Nurmagomedov. You know, they had a fucking ugly-looking Russian Muslim dude fight. So, you know, he's pretty much like the most obvious candidate to never draw a pay-per-view buy ever, and they still pushed him real hard. So, you know, UFC's track record on this shit is fine.
I agree. I do. I mean, I don't have an issue with it, but there's that subset of people who are not happy. Anyway, I've got bigger issues in my life to worry about. Rolling Stone put out an article this week of their Fighter of the Year. I'm not familiar. I don't know if Rolling Stone does this every year, if this was the first time, but they chose Michael Bisping as the Fighter of the Year for 2016. I found this kind of amusing because if you look at his record, he was 3-0 this year, but you got to stop and look at who he fought. He beat 40-year-old Anderson Silva by decision in February, and it was a close fight. I mean, most people had Bisping, but it was close. Then he beat an injured Luke Rockhold on short notice, which was an impressive win, but again, it was a short notice, kind of a bizarre fight. And then he beat the 46-year-old and 13th-ranked middleweight in the world, Dan Henderson, by decision in a fight a lot of people thought Henderson won. Was he the best fighter in the world this year?
No. It's one of those things where if you look at it on paper, even when people look at it back one day, they're going to go, holy shit, it's going to be like, he beat two of the greatest legends ever in one year and the reigning champion. That's a hell of a run. But in reality, I mean, he had a really good year. You know, he had a fight of the year with Henderson, a fight of the year with Anderson Silva, almost a finish of the year with Rockhold. I mean, he's had a great year. People calling him the Fighter of the Year. I'm not going to, like, lose my mind, but I'm sure if I just thought about it for a second or two, you could just, you know, name off somebody that's beaten. I mean, shit, John Jones almost has enough high-quality wins like that. I mean, seriously. You know, at least
For me, it's kind of easy. For me, it's Stipe. He had 3 knockout wins against Arlovski, Verdum, and Overeem all in the first round.
Yeah, that I can't.
You know what I mean? All this year, 3 knockout wins in the first round against real dudes, like guys who are, you know, top five-ish in that division. And to me, that was just crazy, Bisping. I'm not losing my mind over it, but even so, it's like, I don't know. There's, I would go with Cerrone before that. He's 4-0 in a division he's not even supposed to be fighting in, with one submission and three knockouts.
I mean, I can, like, I can name Stipe is a great choice. Dominic Cruz, you know what he did to TJ was in and of itself enough to be impressive as hell, and he might, you know, get another win before the year's out, and that'd be three title wins. Max Holloway, Dom Cerrone. I mean, all kinds of guys. I don't know why Rolling Stone is writing about this. I presume it's just some pathetic, smart fuck asshole writer who just, I want to show I kind of know about MMA and I can build a narrative. It's like a writing or an analytical challenge. Like, I'm so smart. Look at me. I can write about anything and make people believe it. So I'm going to go with Michael Bisping as the unconventional choice. Like, I'm the kind of guy that every year I made sure to vote for, like, the one CD album that nobody really totally had heard of. They kind of knew about it a little bit. And so I was like, oh, fuck, the White Album by the Beatles, man. What you really need to listen to is some Velvet Underground. That'll really rock your fucking world. But fuck you, you dickbag. I'll fucking hang your mother's head from a doorknob.
I know you like that rant, and it was good. It was solid. But it was actually an MMA junkie writer who also writes for Rolling Stone.
That doesn't mean shit to me. Those guys are just bad.
I'm just saying.
I know it's not a guy smart who, fuck writer. I know. They become a smart fuck writer when they go over there.
Okay.
You should imagine what I think about the New Yorker.
So what else we have going on? So Mike Bisping, we would not pick him as the top fighter. Another top fighter, not necessarily this year, but in a lot of years past, really the last 10 years, is Jose Aldo. He recently did an interview on MMA fighting with Ariel Helwani. It was like a written interview of all things. He must have had a translator and they transcribed it. I don't know what was going on. But either way, he made several claims in this interview that raised some eyebrows. He said that Max Holloway turned down a fight with him at UFC 208 in Brooklyn. Holloway responded that he has a bum ankle and wants more money for the fight with Aldo. Aldo also said that he was offered an interim lightweight title fight, but his opponent's dad turned the fight down. I presumed he was talking about Khabib. Khabib obviously went on Twitter today and responded to Aldo and said that he doesn't want an Aldo fight and he wants Tony Ferguson because Ferguson's really the top guy at 155 and not Aldo. If this isn't confusing enough and weird enough, Nate Diaz's name has been thrown into the mix as well with a rumored fight with Khabib for an interim title. But Nate said, I'm only fighting at lightweight for a big fight or $20 million just to take the phone call. Until then, I'm just living my life. What the hell's going on? What's going on? What's going on here?
It's so fucking awesome. You got, you know, dumb Brazilians and dumb Dagestanis. Nobody speaking English. Everybody going through a translator. And Jose Aldo is relaying to a translator, to somebody in English, what he heard from a translator from somebody in English about an interpretation of a legal document. Oh, yeah. This is like the telephone game on steroids. Like, there's no way any of that's going to be hit. And then on top of all that, this gets posted into an interview in English, and you have the guy who speaks Russian first reading it in English and then translating it back into his head into Russian and then writing his reply in English and Russian. So, yeah, this is just fantastic. Nobody knows what anybody said. And at the end of all this, somehow Conor McGregor is a bigger star. That's the only thing I can, you know, really draw from all this. I think it's hilarious. I think that if they actually were to do an actual interim championship for the UFC lightweight title, that in and of itself, setting aside the fact that Jose Aldo would maybe be in it, if that happened, that would be the moment you could truly say, that's it, this company jumped the fucking shark. Like, they're just wanting the word title shot.
I mean, I don't want to say I'm there yet, but usually I'm pretty liberal on stuff like this. Like, who cares if they call it an interim title? Like, I just don't care. I just want to see fights and see who the best guy is. I guess I'm Vince Russo-esque in that the belt's a prop maybe, but to me, when they made that featherweight title for the women with Holly Holm and Ronda me. I'm like, what is that? It's like, you're so desperate for a main event for your next pay-per-view, and you're so desperate to make money, you're going to slap another, like, made-up title in a division that doesn't really exist, doesn't really need a belt. Then you're leaving out the best fighter in the division. The whole reason you would even create that division is Cyborg, and she's not even going to fight in that fight. Like, that was crazy. And then you're hearing this interim lightweight title fight, and to me it just reeks of desperation, where they're just – they got to make money, and they think slapping these title fights on these cards helps. But to me, they'd be better off just making them number one contender fights to a degree.
Yeah.
Like, again, and for me personally, I don't care that much about the belts. But even so, it's like there's some value there. It's been proven over years there's some value to them. And they kill that value when they have all these interim belts, I think, to a degree.
And they ruin the narrative of every fight underneath it, because even if people say, oh, title belts don't matter, don't matter. We've seen the personalities ultimately do draw, but the personalities draw because they're in the world of pro wrestling, except for it's real. And when you have the title belt, it gives every fight some purpose. So it makes the cards as a general rule better, and that you don't have to go into the pro wrestling deal of every single match now needs a reason, because simply wanting to be better and get closer to the ultimate prize in life is not a viable reason anymore in pro wrestling. So long as they have that title belt there, it allows them to have an overall narrative, so it benefits multiple fights every time. And that plus the general conspiracy in my head of anytime I see weird things like this, whether it's the creation of a featherweight title for a division for a woman that's apparently not going to try to make the weight or something like that, and then creating an interim championship like a week after you just created the real championship, and then creating another interim championship for a guy who's just fought like a month ago, all these things, I'm just like, this is WME, you know, putting their fingers in things, they're doing things, and the only possible long-run justification would be they got to jack the hell out of this company to make it look more in demand than ever for the next year for TV negotiations, because they know that everything they have for the next 10 years hinges on those. So they're going to hotshot right. Shit, and then hopefully when that's done, they settle down and go back to the way things have been, because – yeah, you said right. It comes across as a company that's desperate when they're just having – they will have had, I'm sure, their biggest year ever in terms of pay-per-view buys and TV and everything. I mean, this was the biggest year in UFC history, especially after Ronda's done. I mean, it's an amazing year, and to just take all that and be like, okay, there's an interim champion in every single division now. Why not? We're just going to come up, make number one contender actually mean something. You know, do that for real. This is, you know, this also happens when you have, such an unknown process for picking a number one contender. We don't know what Khabib needs to do to get a title shot, but we have a pretty good idea what BJ Penn needs to do at featherweight, which is win twice probably. So once you have that interim championship, it does so far historically lock you into your next fight is for the championship. So that kind of adds some importance to the fights, because UFC boxes themselves in, but I don't know, you can just imagine there's going to come a day when they're going to be like, okay, he was a champion, he's an interim champion, but the champion's returned, so he's no longer interim champion, but we're not going to have him fight the champion because we're going to have somebody else do it instead. I'm just imagining it happen.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how the whole, you know, Khabib, Aldo, Nate Holloway thing breaks out, because from, you know, a business perspective, you probably want the belt on Nate. You know, if you're going to do an interim title fight, you probably want Nate with the belt so he can fight Connor again. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. The home run to me thing just is bizarre. Clearly, they needed a main event for UFC 208 in Brooklyn, but I don't even think that's enough. I mean, even adding this featherweight title, it doesn't mean a whole heck of a lot, but they've already announced 13 fights for that card. Clearly they're working on something, but I mean, it's in, let's see, it's February. February 11th is the date of that show.
That's my birthday.
They're closing in on 2 months here, so they got to get something else signed. It sounds like they're trying to work something with Aldo, but nobody wants to fight him, shockingly. Khabib turned him down. Holloway doesn't want to fight him.
Holloway can't. Khabib, it's probably not been offered the fight.
His dad said he can't.
I like that. Can Khabib come out and fight? No. He's got to go inside and wrestle a bear.
Do you think Khabib and Sage Northcutt have the same dad or something? What's going on there?
No, one of them's son is successful. One of them you can be proud of your boy. The other one you're afraid that he's going to stop being a boy soon.
I thought Khabib wasn't even going to fight again unless he...
Well, now he wants
got Connor, and then he's going to keep UFC out of Russia forever.
Yeah, now it's all about Tony Ferguson, and I which is,
it's funny how that changes, isn't it?
Well, what's really bizarre to me is, okay, in theory, let's pretend that the UFC said, "Hey, Khabib, you Jose Aldo, interim lightweight championship." Unless you're a real mongoloid, which he might be, why would you turn
as opposed to a fake mongoloid, well, a real one?
Yeah, exactly. If he really wants to fight Tony Ferguson, an infinitely more difficult fight than Jose Aldo, a guy who is much bigger, who is much less name value, if he'd rather do that than fight the smaller dude with more name value for an actual quote-unquote championship, there's something wrong with him. That is not a rational decision. Like, there's only one decision there. So if his dad's really turning that down, then they're morons. And they should stop bitching and moaning when they don't get title fights, because – you guys don't even understand the basics of apparently how to get a title fight when it's been offered to you. Rule number one, if you want to fight for the title, when they call up and say, "Hi, would you like to fight for the title?" You say, "Yes. If you can accomplish this, you will be champion." Yeah.
So obviously Aldo did that interview and it got everybody in a tizzy. There's a person who won't be doing many interviews in the next, week and a half, 2 weeks here. And her name is Ronda Rousey. Word on the street is that Rousey will be doing very little press for her next fight against Amanda Nunes at UFC 207. In particular, she is avoiding the MMA media because they turned their backs on her after she lost a home last year. Rousey making a mistake here, does it not make a difference? What do you think?
I don't really give a shit. I think what she'd probably create some narrative. The reality is, she's making the right move. You can see her and Connor, they both admitted, and I think it's accurate that, they do so much press that it's draining on you mentally, and Ronda's done very little for this one, and she doesn't need to. It's the same story they could have told with Connor, which is, he's so focused, he won't even speak to anybody. And for Ronda's comeback, that's fine. But when she says she won't do any MMA media because they turned her back, it's more like, they probably did give you more criticism than Entertainment Tonight did, because that's Entertainment Tonight. But also, if you're Ronda, you got to pick your battles. If you got to do 10 phoners in the morning, you're better off doing Entertainment Tonight and the Today Show and shit like that.
Ellen. Yeah,
exactly.
Absolutely.
If she can get those interviews, and they're going to drive in buys way more. I mean, she was on Half Guard, wouldn't drive a single person in the world to buy the show. Because anybody that would tune in would already know. So, good for her. And fuck it. At the end of the day, if you can do it, do it. If you can avoid the interviews, you're better off for it. So exercise whatever power you can, because a fighting career is a short one.
Are you ready for the weird USADA story of the week?
I think this could be
a running segment on the show. I just thought of it now, but there's another one that came out. Have you heard about this one?
No, I like the way that sounds like it's set up for a joke. So have you heard about the latest USADA failure? What? No, I haven't. Well, let me tell you something. They slipped on the peanut butter and the dog was really happy. But hey. Anyways,
so I'm going to read this verbatim from MMA Fighting because I didn't bother putting it into my own words, and I don't like to lie about things like this. So essentially, USADA is deviating from the NAC sanction in the case of Carlos Diego Ferreira or Fajera, depending on if he's Brazilian. Anyway, The UFC's anti-doping partner suspended Ferreira for 17 months for admitted use of a banned substance and a positive drug test for another banned substance, USADA announced Wednesday. The NAC only suspended Ferreira for 1 year back in June. Ferreira tested positive for Osterine in an out-of-competition drug test conducted on April 29th. He also admitted the use of a supplement which contained 7-keto-DHEA, which is the same thing Machida got bagged for, as an ingredient on the label. The drug test sample, which showed Osterine, also had results consistent with 7-keto-DHEA usage. Ferreira can claim the Osterine came from a tainted supplement, the same one that had the 7-keto on the label as an ingredient. Ferreira said he was unaware that 7-keto was a prohibited substance, much like Machida's argument about the same drug last month. Machida was hit with an 18-month suspension. Ferreira got 17 months.
What the, that's all I could think the whole time is, where do you get 17 months from? Like, that's such a random number. Like, 12 months, 6 months makes sense. 9 months, okay. 12 makes sense. After 12, you go to 18. Yeah, a year and a half. I understand that logic. 2 years, 24 months. Absolutely. 17 months? That's not a thing. Well, nobody gets a year and 5 months. What the hell is that? That's stupid.
Okay, so here's USADA's, you know, statement on it. Ferreira's tainted supplement defense proved legitimate, and it gave him a 17-month suspension rather than the full 2 years he was facing. Level of fault and cooperation play into USADA's decision on length of sanction, and USADA determined that Ferreira did do some due diligence to see if he was taking a banned substance.
Yeah, that makes no sense at all. That doesn't have anything to do with, okay, so why is Chad Mendes out for 2 years? John Jones is out for 1 year. Machida's out for 18 months, and this guy's got 17 months. This is absolutely ridiculous, not to mention, setting aside the fact that they say, yeah, we found that he didn't do anything intentionally, but we're still going to punish him. I'd just love to go to jail for that one. Well, hey, I know that you were asleep and you pulled the trigger, but you're still going to jail for 20 years. No, that's not how it works. I was asleep. I don't have the ability to commit a crime. This is stupid. Fuck you, Sada. This is becoming a joke. And still, what's sad is that they still catch way more people percentage-wise than the other professional sports testing unions people. So you can really see either how dumb fighters are or how good the drugs are football guys got or how lax the testing standards are in football.
Yeah, 17 months is weird. That's all I got.
It's weird and it's stupid. They're inventing their damn punishments. And I don't even know why anymore. Like, what is it, 17 months? Because he returned, like, his samples within 3 days instead of 3 to 5 days or something like that. Like, he gets a bonus. It's like it old school.
You know what? I don't want to say it reminds me of the Nevada Athletic Commission, but it's like, if you're really sorry, admit you screwed up, and say you won't do it again, they cut you more slack than if you're more defiant and say, you know what, F you, I'm going to take this to arbitration and fight this and get a lawyer.
Oh, they for sure do that. But then it seems like they reward you extra if you're willing to come in with a really dumb excuse. Not even like, hey, I did it on accident. It was, hey, my buddy gave me the Cialis that he got from a gas station. Like, right. How did you guys listen to John Jones say that and you just went, oh. That sounds totally plausible. They were at Olive Garden. You just scooped in the pill. You have friends give each other random pills all the time when you're having endless breadsticks. Jones just needs something to wash it down with, so they had some Chianti. Next thing you know, he's jacked up and he doesn't know why he's so strong anymore. Oops, he's innocent. But he should still get 1 year for no reason.
Well, I mean, the thing with Jones that's – I mean, he did get the full suspension. Things that's weird about it that I don't think everybody fully grasps or realizes – different drugs are considered different, like they have different anabolic purposes. And sometimes if you test positive for A, you'll be suspended 2 years. If you test positive for B, you'll be suspended 1 year. So, I mean, Jones got the full term suspension and so did Brock. I shouldn't say Brock did. He was suspended for a year by the Nevada Athletic Commission. We're still waiting on USADA, which is another can of worms because you presume Brock will get suspended for 1 year as well because he tested positive for the same thing, the clomiphene there, as John Jones did. But we still haven't heard from USADA on Brock yet, which is it's been a long time. I mean, it was July. It was 5 months ago. So you wonder what's going on there. And how did Nevada come to a one-year suspension without hearing from USADA? The whole thing is weird and kind of convoluted.
It's a world where 29-year-old men with four children who are testosterone-driven fighters need off-market Cialis, TJF, and 39-year-old freak athletes who are bigger, stronger, faster than any man who's ever lived need like an inhaler or some shit like they're claiming for Brock's excuse. So these poor athletes, they may be physically better than us in every way possible, but they have all these really freaky health problems that no normal person would have.
Yeah. a lot of fight announcements came out over the last week. I think it was last week's show. I mean, we did on Sunday, so it's kind of weird. But we talked about who was going to be next for Derek Lewis and Francis Ngannou.
Yeah, yeah.
We already know. So quick turnarounds for both of those guys. Lewis is going to fight at UFC 208 against Travis Brown. Thoughts on that fight?
Fuck me, man. What the fuck? Yeah, hopefully Lewis knocks him out. I mean, it's actually probably about the right level for Travis Brown, who in my head for a little bit there was like Gam McGee, Ben Rothwell. Like, I'm just like, in my head, I'm just picturing useless lump of bald white man. And it's all pretty much the same, so yeah.
I mean, Brown really dropped off. For a while, he looked like he was going to be like,
yeah, I wonder,
a top flight.
I wonder what happened there. I wonder what the big change in his life was. I wonder if we could pinpoint to some event that took place that just crystallizes exactly why Travis Brown's career and maybe his life even are on a downward trajectory. Just weird. Nobody will ever find anything.
Do you think it's more his where he fights or more his significant other?
At this point, I'm going to say where he trains more than Ronda. They're so shitty there. Like, they're taking guys. I mean, it's one thing when they had Ronda, and you just be like, well, maybe she tried to develop or something like that. But, I mean, they're taking guys and making them worse. Like, that's really difficult to do. Like, it should be at the very minimum, just keep somebody as good as they were when they showed up. It's like, we're going to break you of all those good habits you've developed there. And, all right, keep your hands down when you get punched in the face. If you could take him down, don't do that. Just keep punching at him. Yeah, that's the Armenian way. Useless race.
I mean, right now, looking at the 208 card, that's got to be the co-main. I mean, right now, there's nothing else on that show. I mean, there's fights. They've got 11 fights announced, but that is a thin pay-per-view right now.
That's really sad, because I put in a credential to go to that one, because I'm like, well, it's Brooklyn. I can fly to and from New York and stay overnight for like a total of $150 if you buy your ticket right. And if you don't mind staying like in some crap ass motel, which I really kind of embrace. So I'm like, yeah, I'll put in my credentials. And if I get it, I'm like, I don't want to go fucking watch Holly Holm and the Dutch chick fight each other for a title that really shouldn't exist and might not exist in 2 years when the Fertittas buy the company back from WME for 20 cents on the dollar.
That would be an amazing story. Then Ngannou, who came off a big win last weekend or 2 weekends ago, wherever we're at now, is going to fight Andrei Arlovsky at UFC on Fox 23 on January 28th. So another quick turnaround there. What do you think of Ngannou and Arlovsky?
I think it shows what the UFC sees something in Ngannou. I think he's if you look at Ngannou and Lewis both fighting the same night, they both get opponents in the next show. Ngannou got the bigger name and the guy who's maybe easier to beat because he can just get dropped at any time, but he's definitely getting the bigger name. So they're both fine fights at heavyweight. They're pretty much both exactly what's needed, and I'm sure they're hoping both guys win so they can kind of start shuffling the decks in the Titanic that is the heavyweight division. But you got to do it. Yeah. You got to do it anyway. The band plays on.
Yeah, it could be a changing of the guard sort of thing. I saw something. I forget. It might have been a tweet or something that made me laugh. Because I think Arlovsky turned down a fight with Rumble Johnson, Anthony Johnson, because Johnson hit too hard. And they had fought before at heavyweight, and Johnson, I think, broke his jaw or something.
Yeah.
But then he fights Ngannou instead, who's probably one of, like, I don't know, 20 guys in the entire UFC that can hit as hard as Rumble.
I think it just shows how scary and how hard Anthony Johnson must hit. That dude must really have power in his hands that dudes are afraid of.
Mm-hmm.
And Arlovski may also just realize, well, it's better if I had a heavyweight than a light heavyweight for my pride and career. I've already lost once to this light heavyweight, so I got to feel like a man somewhat. I mean, all the other guys from, you know, Western Russia are doing real well in the UFC, and here I am. You know, nobody even remembered when I had a title, and it was really pretty, but I had fangs and flowing hair and hair on my back, and now I'm just a journeyman joke.
Yeah, it really sucks when you lose to a light heavyweight who was once a welterweight.
Yeah.
Another fight announced, which I don't love, and I think we talked about last time. It's been officially booked for UFC on Fox 23 on January 28th, is Donald Cerrone versus Jorge Masvidal, which on paper, I mean, it is a good action fight, two strikers, good fighters, obviously, but to me, it's a risk for Cerrone that he doesn't need to take. Obviously, he likes to stay active and make the money, and he basically said he wanted to fight on that show, and Dana's granted him his wish, but it's like he's real close to a title fight at welterweight or a big fight against a big name where he could make some serious dough, and he risks it going against a guy who I mean, you wouldn't favor Masvidal in this fight, but a smaller name where he could, you know, you never know. He could get dropped and lose that fight and be out of the mix.
It's, I mean, it's stupid. The two top guys, from a booking standpoint, making money and all that, things that we care about, because that's what we do.
I just feel bad for Cerrone. Well, it's
he should be fighting Robbie Lawler or Damian Maia, and that's it.
Or Nick Diaz. I'd take a Diaz fight.
Or Nick, yeah. But that's it. No, those would be great fights. But the guy truly lives his gimmick. He's, I want to fight in Denver because he likes Denver and that's important to him. And he likes to fight a lot anyways. And you give him a fight and he's just not going to turn it down. And, I mean, at a certain point, I think that's who he is. That's why I think he's been a better fighter. As of late, I think he just stopped caring and just went out there and said, let's fucking go do it. And What's the worst that's going to happen? If he loses, and most guys lose once a year, they're lucky to go 500 for the year. He could lose once a year and still end up batting like 800 the way that, you know, he fights. So, even if he loses, yeah, he'd just go up there and rack off 10 wins in a row next year between two divisions.
Then in the rematch that everyone's been clamoring for, we're going to have Junior Dos Santos versus Stefan Struve 2 on February 19th. In Halifax, Nova Scotia. Kind of a weird fight to run again, but obviously they needed a main event. Dos Santos hasn't fought in a while. Probably needs another win before a title fight anyway. But just kind of random out of the blue. Neither guy's from Canada. There's not a real connection there. Thoughts on that one?
Well, I guess the closest connection would be that Struve kind of looks like a Viking and Halifax is on the Eastern West Coast, so there was visited by Vikings. I don't really know. This fight, when I first hear about it, all I can think of is, this is what you do when you want to punish somebody that you're mad at and you're the UFC. It's like, okay, you're going to fight in a main event in Halifax. That's right. You're going to fight in a province next to another province that I think is Labrador or something like that. Like, you're going to be fighting in a place that Canadians think is cold. Congratulations there, dude, from Brazil. Yeah, we love you here. Oh, you want to play hardball? All right. We got our ways. But in reality, they probably just, they don't think that way. And they just say, yeah, they're both coming off a win in their names, and it's something.
Yeah, both guys probably needed a fight. I mean, Dos Santos hasn't fought since April, so it's going to be almost a year before he fights. He needed something, and he needs a win, so... we will see how that goes. Then in the last big fight that's been announced, and this one I don't think has been signed, if there's a verbal agreement, but it hinges on Mark Hunt getting some demands met. The rumored fight for Hunt is Alistair Overeem, of all people. If you remember back to UFC 200, Mark Hunt was not happy that he ended up fighting Brock Lesnar because Lesnar popped for You know, steroids twice, PEDs basically. After UFC 200, Hunt bashed the UFC, bashed Dana, called Barack a roided up monkey, was not happy, was ranting and raving. And now it looks like he's going to fight Overeem, who has popped for steroid usage in the past. But there's a caveat here. Hunt says he will only fight again if the UFC adds a provision to his contract that further protects him if Overeem fails a drug test. And if Overeem fails a drug test, he wants 100% of Overeem's purse.
Yeah, I don't know if the UFC can legally do that. I mean, yeah, usually you can agree to anything, but winner take all or, type of person.
It'd be more a question of Overeem.
Well, yeah, I mean,
those terms, right?
You, getting past the hurdle of would Overeem ever agree to something so onerous and stupid as to trust your, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars to USADA's rigorous testing methods. But yeah. Otherwise, I feel like if I'm a court and like, yeah, I'd be like, yeah, you cheated. That's against the rules, but you're still entitled to be paid something for your effort of getting punched in the head also. So, I mean, it's a weird one. Credit to Hunt if he can get it. It'll be interesting to see if he gets that. Is everybody else going to have stuff like, or the guys going to start calling each other's bluffs? Is that going to be the new gimmick? Like, I'll bet, you know, I'll bet you half my purse you don't make weight or some shit like that. So, it's a good fight at least. We get that.
Yeah, I mean, if it happens, it's just, to me, it's a very ironic fight for Hunt to take considering Overeem's past with, you know, juicing. Obviously his body has changed a lot over the years and he's failed tests. I shouldn't say tests. I mean, he's failed at least one test in the past. Of all the guys to fight, the guy who's most synonymous with using steroids in all of MMA is the guy you're going to fight next. Like, it's another one of those where it's just, I don't want to say it's hypocritical, but it doesn't make sense based on all the stuff they've said over the years. I shouldn't say years, but last couple months anyway on Hunt's part.
It could just be as simple as Hunt looked around and said, they're all using, what am I going to do? Like, I got to fight somebody. And, you know, in his mind, if he can clean up the fight and go out there and beat him, it'll really erase everything that happened before. So, I mean, it's weird. It's really, I mean, it is humorous, but he's sticking by his public demand, and they'll probably say, oh, we're going to do some extra testing and blah, 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 and it'll be fine.
We'll see. We'll see if it happens. I mean, if he's going to stick to that and Overeem doesn't agree, the fight probably won't happen, obviously. But maybe Hunt can find somebody who will stick to that agreement and he will get a fight. But just based on all his talk that he wanted to be released, it was all talk, you know, to a degree, especially if he doesn't hold up his end of the deal where he wants 100% of the purse. If he waives that and just takes the fight, it's like, what were you bitching about all that time? Well, and throughout his career, he's fought guys who were on roids and he didn't care. I mean, Mir's popped. I mean, if you look through his resume, it's like he's fought
K-1.
A lot of guys.
Everybody fought in K-1.
Pride, yeah.
But, I mean, I always like, I'm sure I said it, I always like the idea that Mark Hunt is just drunk and tweeting. Like, that's how he makes all of his decisions, just misreading something on the internet while he's hammered on a 12-pack of beer, and he's just like, fuck this, I'm not going to fight again if they don't fix this stuff. And he wakes up and he's like, I don't care. If they don't let me fight, I don't fight. And then he gets drunk again and says something else stupid, and at the end of the day, not kind of like Donald Cerrone, just doesn't give a shit in life. Cerrone, a guy who's also actually failed for stuff once in the past, though. So. We'll see.
There are no Bellator or UFC events this weekend. Obviously, we Christmas on Sunday, and then obviously Christmas Eve on Saturday night. So really nothing major on the calendar. Obviously, the following weekend, we've got UFC 207 with Rousey versus Nunez, which is on a Friday night, the 30th. Which is going to be a little different and weird. In times past, that show hasn't really drawn that well. It'll be interesting to see what kind of drawing power Rousey really has at this point. If she's, you think that show will still do a million buys, or are you kind of waiting to see how the buildup comes in?
I think it'll do a million buys. I think the question is, could it have done more? I think Ronda is just, she's one of those stars that's so big. And if here's the thing, if it doesn't do well, then it's 100% that night. That's it. There's no other reason. Ronda's will apps. She just should do a million buys just waking up in the morning. She's just that level of star.
I agree with you. I think people look back at it was Lesnar and Overeem. They had a fight on the Friday yep. night, I think, before New Year's. And you don't want to say it tanked. I think it did like 550,000 buys or something. But it tanked for a Brock UFC pay-per-view. And I think some of that was the build-up for that fight. They didn't really seem to have a grudge. The whole build-up was based on how tall and how much they weighed, if you remember back to
oh,
it.
Yeah.
So, I mean, Rousey's comeback on a Friday night, it's one of those things, if people want to see it, why would you be less likely to watch it on a Friday than on a Saturday? I mean, even getting home from work, maybe you would have an issue. But even like on the West Coast or something, but the show still starts at 7. Ronda's not going to be in the cage until, you know, 9:30, 10 o'clock. Everybody's home by then, even on the West Coast. So if people want to see it, they'll go see it. I would even think on New Year's Eve, if it's really something people want to see, they'll pay to see it, you know?
I think that New Year's Eve is really the one place where it all gets hung up. Doing something on New Year's Eve, I can see both the positives and the negatives. I can see where it would do well because it would be a good thing just to throw on the TV when you're having everybody over or whatever. Of course, I can also understand why it might not do well because people are all going out to bars and doing things and having
right.
fun or whatever.
It depends on the fight.
Yeah, and you know? Being the night before New Year's Eve could also get – it could hurt. If it does, it's all 100% just due to the night. It has nothing to do with Ronda, and it'll be the UFC's fault for – I have no idea why they did it. There's just no reason at all that they should have done it this way. They should have just waited a week, and I'm sure it would have actually a week later might be college football. I'm not really sure. Just do it some other time. Even if you wait a month, do it at Brooklyn 208 or whatever it is, and just delay or something like that. But I mean, hell, you could put the rest of that card up there without Ronda and Nunes. Move Ronda and Nunes to Brooklyn, and you'd have two really good shows still.
Yeah, I mean it'll be an interesting turn of events just to see how big of a star Ronda really is. Did the home loss affect her as a draw? It'll say a lot for sure. It also hinges on afterwards if she wins the fight or not. I mean, I think if she loses that fight and loses it bad, it might be the end of the road for her. But obviously, we can probably talk about this next week too. So that's all I've got from here. I mean, I think we kept this one fairly short for us.
Yeah, people will be able
there wasn't there's not a show to preview this week, so it kind of kept it under control. Anything else going on?
Nope, not a single thing in the world. Everybody, enjoy your Christmas, and if you don't believe, then it's still fucking Christmas. You don't have to believe. It's all about just getting free shit. That's the most American thing of all time. Just get your free shit. And donate to the Salvation Army, because I know people aren't doing that right now, but I think it's a really good charity. So good for them. I don't know. I got nothing else.
That sounds good.
All right. Matt, say goodbye to everybody.
Goodbye. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays. We will see you next week.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about. We hope you will.